morning, all you science girls and science guys. This is Bagels and Bio on radio.dominican.edu. It is 7:17 in the morning, another grand gray day here in the Bay Area. And today I will be discussing the science of pirates. We're going to touch upon three topics in the next half an hour. First, the science behind your favorite Pirates of the Caribbean villains. Second, we're going to discuss the possibility of having monkey captains. That's right, little furry hominids going at it on the high seas. And then finally, we're going to talk about the science between peg legs and eye patches, the traditional pirate uniform. And I apologize, this morning it might be a little loopy, so please bear with me. We're going to have some solid science Thursday, same time, same place. Dr. Muhammad El-Majdoubi is kind enough to give me an interview, and we'll be discussing neuroplasticity, stem cells, and neuroscience in general. In case you missed the news, Dr. Majdoubi recently gave a TED Talk at TEDx Marin. It should be posted in the next 2 to 3 weeks, so be sure to go to the TED site and look for Dr. Muhammad El-Majdoubi's speech about how the digital environment is changing the structure of the modern generation's brains. And by modern generation, I get the impression he means me and younger. So if you think your brain is a little different from your parents, you might want to check that out. All right, so shall we dive into the Pirates of the Caribbean? I am a huge Johnny Depp fan, and like most huge Johnny Depp fans, I love science. I'm not sure if that actually applies. I think it does. So I'm going to start with the first movie where you have your famous Black Pearl. They steal the gold and turn into skeletons and do the super cool bottom of the ocean skeleton walk. So can we actually physically have skeletons move? The simple answer is no. What allows us to move is called skeletal muscle. This is muscle that attaches through ligaments to your bones and then either contracts or relaxes to move. So what happens is when you want to move forward, you actually send out a signal to your legs. The legs have these sliding filaments which create this sort of lattice structure, and it pulls these filaments together, constricting your muscle, and then that muscle movement forces your bones to move on the hinge that is your knee. So if you don't have, let's say, muscles to do that, what are some other mechanisms of moving bone? Well, one option would be perhaps these skeletons are magnets. And not only are they magnets, but they also have some sort of electrocurrent generator. In this way, if you have a magnetic charge distributed throughout your bones, which is possible, using small minerals like iron and things, there's actually many animals out there that have magnetoreceptors. So these are little vesicles containing magnetic minerals, and through changes in their direction, animals can actually sense the magnetic field of the earth and get directions. Animals that have this include sea slugs, pigeons, and I think, never mind. Sea slugs and pigeons are the only ones coming to mind at gray o'clock this morning. And anyways, so these creatures can constantly detect the world around them through these little magnetic vesicles. So potentially through the wonders of evolution and such, these creatures could evolve to become zombie pirates, because that is the natural evolution of things. And these magnetoreceptors could move throughout their bones, and because of this, through some sort of current generation, you could actually control the immediately surrounding electromagnetic fields and thus create some sort of electromagnetic attraction or repulsion to move your limbs. So, for example, if you wanted to lift your knee, instead of contracting, you would just create a more repulsive charge at the top and a more attractive charge at the back so that your leg will start to hinge upwards. And there is one problem, and that is of the salt water. So, as we know, different materials have different abilities to perpetuate electric currents. So they are either conductors or insulators. And as you probably know, if you ever get near a downed power line, the water is a dangerous conductor. And further, this means that you might have to adjust the amount of current you send out to achieve the same things that you might at air temperature. So it's unclear if underwater you'd actually get enough force to have a good conduction to actually create an electric current through your bones to create a strong enough magnetic force to attract. Someone much better at physics can do the math for me, hopefully, and get back to me. All right, so that takes care of Pirates of the Caribbean Movement 1, skeleton zombies. Could not move without muscles, and should we go underwater, not only would there be no oxygen to fuel the muscles, so you'd have to find some alternative method. My proposal was magnets, but that's probably implausible because of both the seawater, the need to conduct electric current in said seawater, as well as the distribution throughout the bones of the magnetic material currently doesn't exist in humans, so you must go through some dramatic genetic changes should you get the curse of the treasure. However, it'd be very hard after removing the curse to go back and somehow send out all these minerals from your bones, since they probably altered your bone structure. So you might end up with a bunch of pocketed, spongy, hollow bones, which is always lovely. All right, movie number one, done, finished. Skeletons probably can't move of their own volition, and I went on a crazy rant about magnets, which I'm not sure is completely physically accurate. It's been a rough morning. Moving on to movie two, where we have Davy Jones, and movie three. I didn't see four, so we're not going to talk about it. All I know is they're mermaids, and I'm going to talk about the possibility of combining fish and humans and discussing Davy Jones. Anyways, so as you might remember, Davy Jones has the nasty-looking head of an octopus, so you can clearly tell he's a villain. And this means that somehow he has merged with the sea creature. Not only has he merged with the sea creature, but a lot of his crew has as well. So you'll see different members with things like barnacles and such across their face. So can people actually merge with sea creatures? Well, probably not. The first problem is our immune system. Our immune system can detect cells which are not the same as ours. And we are separated significantly from fish at this point. Now, if you were talking about merging with a whale or something along those lines, that might be possible. So if we're going to say, forgive me, I really have not seen Pirates of the Caribbean 4, so I don't know how involved mermaids are, but if we were going to look at mermaids, it'd be more likely that they would have a dolphin tail than an actual scaly fish tail, which might be better for their general blood flow and happiness and tissue health, but probably wouldn't look as cool as the iridescent fish scales. Anyways, so let's say you somehow become immunosuppressed through, I don't know, a curse. It seems to be a popular way to do things. And you are allowed to implant octopus tissue onto a person, and or you implant octopus stem cells. If you implant stem cells, will those stem cells actually develop? Well, we probably do not have the same signaling mechanisms for those cells as in octopi. Stem cells become developed and differentiated from their pluripotent state based off of extracellular markers. So it is, while some stem cells excrete enough signaling to direct their neighbors, it is more likely that a octopi stem cell, if it could live in a human body, would just remain a completely inert mass and or differentiate randomly. And when you differentiate randomly, as we have seen in stem cell culture in the past, you end up with these little blobs of random cells. So you might have, for example, a heart muscle, cardiac muscle next to a neuron, and it's completely useless. But anyways, none of this results in some super cool tentacles that you can play the piano with, unfortunately. So let's get rid of the stem cell idea, since we know they cannot actually differentiate into working organs, and move on to transplantation. So what if you took an actual squid and somehow grafted the tissue directly onto a person's face? Well, and they're immunosuppressed, so that's not an issue. Well, different animals operate at different temperatures, especially between sea creatures and land animals. So mammals are thermoregulatory, which means that we have an internal temperature different from our external temperature. Octopi, however, like a lot of sea creatures, are not endothermic. So, or let me rephrase. Octopi have a different homeostatic mechanism. And that means that they have proteins and all these adaptations to adapt to different temperatures than we do. So for every protein you have in your body, and proteins are the things that give your body energy and move your metabolism forward, so you wouldn't be able to get any energy from food and things like that if you didn't have working enzymes. So these enzymes, which are proteins, only operate within a certain range of temperatures. Within the certain range of temperatures, there is a lot of overlap in a specific species. However, when you start to diverge in temperatures, enzymes start to break down. So an ectotherm, which means that they don't regulate, would have different proteins than an endotherm, probably more temperature resistant proteins. Octopi are endothermic, but they do operate at a different temperature than us, sort of like if you ever pet your dog is going to be over 100 degrees, slightly warmer than a human being. And that generally continues down with mammals, at least based on size. So if you grafted it, it would probably be at the wrong temperature. And further, it would probably have the wrong signalings, again, like the stem cells. So the tissue would quickly become necrotic and fall off the face. So ultimately, I don't think it is possible to have a maintained octopi tissue. What you could do, alternatively, should we try really hard in Mythbuster fashion to make this work no matter what you could do is to develop a transgenic octopi human hybrid as crazy as this might sound. And this really means that you would take an octopi cell, merge it with a human cell, create something with identifiable markers, and this means your immune system would be compatible with it, and that the octopi tissue would also have the important enzymes to operate at human temperatures and with human signaling markers, for example, muscle movement and things like that. And because these are not conserved between octopi and humans, it'd be likely that you could create a mixture of octopi and human enzymes and things like that. So not only would you have cells with human characteristics, but also octopi characteristics. If you had the technology to integrate those perfectly, then you might be able to create some super cool piano-playing tentacles. All right, I've talked enough. I'm getting frazzled. Please listen to some Pirates of the Caribbean theme song, get in the mood, and when we come back, we will discuss the possibility of the Monkey Jack becoming a pirate captain, and also touch briefly upon the science of peg legs and eye patches. You're listening to Bagels and Bio. I'm your host, Chatula. This is radio.dominican.edu. It is 7:33. Thanks for joining me. Welcome back. You're listening to Bagels and Bio on radio.dominican.edu. This is Dominican's one and only science morning show. And my God, it is the morning. We are at 7:34. It is o gray o'clock, judging by the not present sun. And we are discussing the science of pirates. In the first half, we covered the Pirates of the Caribbean villains. We talked about the possibility of moving skeletons underwater, as you saw in the first movies. And then we looked at the possibility of getting an octopi face, as seen on the villain Davy Jones. And we sort of touched upon what I know of Pirates of the Caribbean 4, which is that they're mermaids, and that, in fact, you should probably just use a mammal for a tail instead of a fish. In the last 10 minutes, we are going to talk about monkey captains and the science behind peg legs and eye patches. So, first of all, monkey captains. So, we all remember that pirates love monkeys, and monkeys are present in the Caribbean. But how useful are monkeys on a boat? Do they actually earn their keep? And especially on those old wooden boats, you had a limited amount of fresh food and water to sustain stead. Monkey. Well, in a 2008 experiment, they found that they could actually teach monkeys to use external limbs and robotic arms, which means ultimately that you don't have to directly communicate orders between a monkey and a person, which opens up all sorts of super exciting ideas. For example, if we take a monkey and we want him to, say, control the rudder, we could hook up some electrodes to his brain, show him the rudder, have him think really hard about the rubber, and give him food every time the rudder moves. In this way, you can teach a monkey how to move an external appendage, and whether it be arm or rudder. So after that, you could work with the monkey to teach him navigation, order him around using all sorts of hand signals and or actual verbal cues, since monkeys have brains very close to ours, and it has been shown previously with the large apes, at least the great apes, like gorillas, that they can sign and understand language, and they're also fairly easily trained animals, and you can see in lots of TV shows and things like that. So, what are the advantages of having a monkey? Well, a monkey's small on a ship and is very good at climbing, which means should you be in rough waters or things like that, and the monkey has to go all the way up to the crow's nest to look out and steer the boat through, let's say, reefs or away from an enemy using its magical brain rudder skills, it could much easier than your human companions. So, monkey captain of the future? I think so. Let's just accept that that is a fact and move on. To the science of peg legs and eye patches. Let's start with peg legs. So, our leg is an amazing force-bearing system, and a peg leg is a stick of wood. What are the key differences? Well, first of all, a peg leg does not have built-in shock absorbers. Your knee and ankles and things like that are full of cartilage, which gives your body a sort of suspension system. So as you move, these joints can absorb that force between the bones and prevent them from rubbing. A stick of wood, however, would, if you lose your leg above your knee or all the way up to your hip, it would likely put all that pressure directly upon the bone, which could cause splintering and the other problems we see with that sort of intense long-term pressure upon a bone. You can see this in long-distance runners and individuals who exercise a lot, who put a lot of stress on their bones, like gymnasts. You'll get shin splints, things like that, and that's likely what would happen should you have a peg leg. The second part is that our foot, as far off as it might seem when we look down at it, actually serves an important point to spread out the force of our body upon the ground. A peg leg has a single point, so if you apply equal force over a smaller distance, as any of you who wear high heels will know, first you make a larger impact on the ground. So, unlike a foot, should you try to hike through the jungles on a peg leg, your peg leg will likely force itself directly into the ground, reducing your mobility. This also reduces your stability. Since you are applying pressure on a smaller area, you have less ability to react to the environment, shifting your weight forward and backwards. In fact, you can't shift your weight at all, since you only have a single point. Unless you're super skilled and have a rounded peg leg or something of that sort. However, like I said about the monkey, we are getting the technology to move fake appendages. So eventually you could not have a peg leg, but actually have a robotic leg that might be better than a human leg. And the cool part is your foot could turn 360 degrees. No one else seems to think this is as cool as I do. But think about swimming. Wouldn't it be great to just be able to like reverse paddle? Anyways, that's my rant about peg legs. There's also all sorts of synthetic materials they have developed to better serve as shock absorbers and things like that when replacing legs. However, let's assume pirates don't have that technology and are in the middle of the forest, had their leg amputated, and need to get on with their day and have to whittle themselves a wooden leg. What's the best way to do it? Well, the best way would probably be to create a ball, which you could then roll and adjust to the ground. A ball peg leg doesn't actually have to sit flat on the ground to be stable. And it would just be very, very cool to pull off your peg leg and start playing pool with it. All right, so the science of eye patches, how practical it is to have an eye patch. Well, like most predators, humans have eyes on the front of their face. This means we have a smaller range of vision on the outside, but we have depth perception. So our two eyes, when they look forward, create an overlap. And in this overlap, you have an idea of depth. Now, I personally do not have depth perception. Something happened with my left eye, and it just doesn't feel like communicating with the right eye. And so I have no depth perception. So I might be a terrible person to explain this. But what happens once you lose an eye is that you only get a flat image. While this doesn't impact a lot of activities, imagine your entire life being as accurate as playing a video game. So when you drive, it's like playing a video game driving, or when you shoot an arrow or try to run a long time, it feels almost like Wii running, or at least that's the closest example I have. The entire world is 2D, so it's very difficult to tell what exactly the distance is going to be between objects. And so if a pirate had a eye patch and no depth perception, how big of a problem would this be for said pirate? Well, think of a ship. There are lots of thin objects which you would need to detect from a 2D surface. For example, ropes, the speed of a cannonball, things like that, seagull poop. They're all very important. While losing one eye is very easily compensated for by your brain, almost too easily. So often people will have a perfectly physiologically functioning eye, but they'll lose some innervation or things like that. So the structure of the eye is fine, but the eye cannot actually send messages to the brain. So in practical senses, as a sensory organ, the eye is dead. And the body just copes with having one eye. It's almost like we have a built-in spare. However, there are larger psychological damages of having one eye. Mainly, you can remember that you once had that sense of that field of vision. Second, people are much easier to sneak up on you, which is very important if you're a pirate and have to fend off your scurvy friends. And thirdly, you also have a larger range of blind spots. So there's an area of the eye called the optic disc where your nerves actually enter the eye. And this area is important because it creates a blind spot in your vision. There are no photoreceptors there. You just have a bunch of nerves. And so the two eyes compensate often for their blind spots. And your brain also compensates for your blind spots. However, if you don't have that double vision, you can actually have your brain piece together an entire image with a giant hole in it. So, for example, they've done studies where they'll put a bright pink dot in one person's vision and have them close one eye, and they will create a uniform surface right over that pink dot. So, for example, you're looking at a white dot. Well, there's a clear pink dot in it. You close one eye, that pink dot goes into your blind spot. Your brain doesn't perceive it to be there and thus uses the surrounding information to fill in the gap and says it's just a blank wall. Well, replace that with a cannonball and you quickly have not only a one-eyed pirate, but a very dead one-eyed pirate. That is my rough estimation of the science of pirates. We will have some real strong science from Dr. Muhammad El-Majdoubi on Thursday morning, which I'm really excited about. Please bear with Bagels and Bio. It is an early morning show, and I am adapting to being on the radio at oh dark o'clock. I'm your host, Tertula. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu. I hope to see you next week. Thank you. That you